Eric Francis Fridays with Eric Francis. A real treat brought to you by the Beltliner All Day Brunch. Craft beer and boozy slushies 7 days a week. If only you'd found a spot in Pittsburgh with all the above to do this interview from. Maybe you're close. Where do we find you, Eric?
I'll be getting into an Uber momentarily to search out just such a joint, but it'll involve mostly steak and rum.
Yes, very good. Okay, I've never been to Pittsburgh. Everyone raves about this city. Apparently, awesome place.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. I can't say a bad thing about it. I mean, it's not the warmest city. It was just not as warm as it was, say, yesterday where I was, but it's okay. That's okay. City of Champions here. We'll see. We'll check it out.
All right, very good. Look, finally a chance to talk goaltending. Just kidding. For the 26th time in 27 chats this year, Flames net mining seems to be the lead. Something about Thursday nights leads us to always talk hockey on Fridays that starts with goaltending.
Well, I got to say this. I said this the other day to a colleague. You know, I have found this year that the way Bill Peters has managed his goaltending has been, like, stunningly predictable. In other words, in my humble opinion, he's done almost every move has been similar to what I would do. I'm not saying I'm smart. I'm not saying he's a genius. I'm just saying I find it predictable. And Mike Smith played so well the other night. He had that swagger back. I mean, he said that after the game, but he was also just so aggressive. I love the punch in the back of the head to Huberdeau after the shootout attempt. It was his feisty old self, but he kind of spoke that way after the game. The old swaggerish, that's not even a word, but the old Mike Smith, the vintage Mike Smith, I think people would take that from what he was last year. But I know it comes with a lack of confidence, and I know there are hiccups along the way. But I'm going to just say this. Don't be surprised if game one of the playoffs, Mike Smith is your starter. And I think it's an open competition from now to the end. He's been playing better than Riddick of late. Would you at least agree with me there?
No. His last nine starts, he's allowed four in four of them, and David Riddick's done that five times all year. His good games have been better, but his bad games are still much worse than David Riddick's bad games. It feels like you need to score five every other night with Mike Smith if you're going to win. Now, last night, not that example at all, and I had no problem with the players. Very good. The problem's been he can't string these together with any ease, and he always seems to do it against the teams out of the playoffs, not the Tampas of the world.
Yeah, no, I there was a stat the other day. Derek Wills was throwing it around that the save percentage of the two goalies, I think, for the last month and a half.
He's a couple thousandths of a percent. Yeah, better.
Yeah, it's identical. And, you know, and that really is kind of the stat that you, the equalizer. I mean, that's really how all goalies should be judged, if you ask me. It shouldn't be about wins and losses as much. That said, I'm not going to sit here and say anything bad about David Riddick. All I'm saying is there are cracks in the armor with David Riddick. He's, you know, lately he hasn't been as stellar as he has been in the past. That game he allowed six goals the other day, five of them I got no problem with. Five of them in Tampa Bay were unbelievable goals, one-timers for the most part. Mm-hmm. So I'm not blaming him. All I'm saying is I think the mentality, it's been a roller coaster all year long with these goalies, and I think the mentality for the last 2 months has been, well, clearly this is David Riddick's team, and everyone around the league is going, well, do you really think you can win with David Riddick? And people in Calgary are all saying, yeah, we kind of think we can because he's been that good. I'm just saying the narrative is changing ever so slightly, and I'm suggesting that over the next 6 weeks till the playoffs, the narrative is going to continue to change, evolve, devolve, whatever the case may be. And so I'm predicting six more weeks of conversations like this with you and I.
Could be, yeah. And look, here's the thing. It's almost like the goaltending issue is a big one, but they just haven't been playing well. Like, I don't care who's in net against Tampa. I don't like the effort at all. They're going to get, you know, Mike Smith might let in six and probably could have been had a really good night. I don't know that if David Riddick's in net last night, there's a big difference or a drop. I mean, it really hasn't been about goaltending of late. This losing streak has been about this club not getting much from their top six and not getting much of an effort away from the puck from two of their higher paid stars in Gaudreau, Monahan, amongst some others. Kachuk's been MIA for weeks, despite what will be a career year. And I don't think it's necessarily sound the alarms. Every team will go through a run like this. But the bigger issue than net mining for me is the overall play of this group is really, really taking a dive the last week to 2 weeks.
Totally agree. I totally agree. That top line has been pedestrian. and not really as dangerous. Not only are they not getting the points, they're just not as dangerous, creating chances. They don't seem to have that jump. The 3M line has been abysmal. I mean, let's just say it. I mean, Kachuk's gone 7 games in a row now without a point. Frolik, Backlund, I think, is pointless in that streak. I think he's got 1 goal. The fact that they're picking up the odd point here and there, it's kind of amazing to me. It is also amazing to go in that dressing room after these games. Like last night, those guys were pretty pumped up about the way they played. That surprised me. Maybe I was just stunned all night by the horrific crowd there.
It was a sleepy start, man. Like, I think they certainly paid more attention to the defensive side of the puck early, but they created almost nothing against the worst net mining team in the NHL. Nobody allows a higher percentage of shots to go in than the Florida Panthers, and they failed to get high-quality chances for what felt like the first 2 periods.
Yeah, and what, did they end up with 43 shots on goal or something, and they still, you know, they came away with only a point. I mean, anyway, it's kind of confounding to me that they would walk away from that game feeling pretty good about themselves. Obviously, they wanted that extra point, but I just don't have a read on this team of late like I should. I just, these guys, when you leave Florida with anything less than a deuce, it seems to me that you should be just stunningly disappointed. And I'm sure they were disappointed to not get the 2 points and turn this slide around. But they were pretty upbeat last night, and they figured they did a lot of the right things. You know, the biggest tone, the thing that everybody is talking about in that room the last several days, is the fact that the game's changing because it's the playoffs coming. After the break, they think it tightens up, or it should tighten up, or they need to tighten up more. The coach is stressing it. The players are stressing it. It saddens me as a fan to hear that because it's been pretty fun hockey all year long with the Flames. And it's not as entertaining to watch them of late. But that may just be because that first line isn't, you know, going great guns. I don't know. But defensive hockey is coming. I still don't believe that it's going to be the 2-1, 3-2 games like we saw last night. I still think this team is going to continue to win games and lose games 4-3, 5-4. I just think the NHL is changing. And that's the way it's going to be moving forward.
Scoring's up, and this has been a group that has had no problem putting the puck in the net until this recent run here. Okay, let's tackle a couple other issues. What's the latest on James Neal, and is this a significant loss or not? Because there really hasn't been much in the way of production all year. It will go down as probably James Neal's worst season in the NHL.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, I'm not happy the guy's hurt. I don't want anybody to ever get hurt. But I'm not saying that this is necessarily a terrible thing. I bet you there were moments that the Calgary Flames have contemplated making him a healthy scratch. But given that he has 4 more years left on his deal and the damage that you could do to that relationship if you do something like that, I think they've been hesitant to try it. I think this gives them an opportunity to see other people. Sounds like a dating thing.
It
gives them a chance to, you know, the Curtis Lazar call up I find was fascinating. I was not expecting that. I love it. I was expecting him to come up this year and be rewarded for his hard work and, you know, solid attitude down there, but I was not expecting him at this time. I thought they were going to wait till a little later in the season. I think that's exciting. I'm not sure he's going to be in the lineup tomorrow, but I hope he is. I saw James Neal walk out of the building just after the game last night, and he looked fine. Now, that doesn't mean anything, right? I mean, guys can have major ailments and still walk fine and look normal in a suit, but, you know, as opposed to other injuries I've seen where guys are limping out and it's noticeable.
They didn't leave on a gurney. That's the good news, right?
No, right? And it was just an awkward play. And, you know, when he didn't come back, you knew something was a little more than just a nick. So we'll see how long it is. But in the meantime, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. He was trending a little better of late. I'll say that. I don't think I'm just being charitable.
No, it's true. It was a low bar, but he's definitely moved towards, you know, I don't want to say career norm for him, but at least in that direction.
Yeah. And, you know, he had a 3-assist streak going, and, you know, that's as good as it's been all year for him. But anyway, the point is he was getting more involved in the play. Still, I think a shakeup's good, and I think a guy like Curtis Lazar could bring that sort of, you know, energy and heat. And I'm not trying to heap a whole bunch of pressure on him, and I know what he gave us in Calgary, you know, for the last several years, and it was a whole lot of nothing. But I think in a third-line role, if he was given a third-line role, I think the energy he could provide and the possibility of regaining that scoring touch at the big level, I think that's kind of exciting. I certainly go into a game more optimistic that you're going to see something from Curtis Lazar than I thought when you're going to see from James Neal of late. That's for sure.
It'll be intriguing. I think history and looking at comparables at his age, I would not be putting any money that he returns to what everyone thought he would be, which is an impact NHLer. But he's had a really, really good year in the A, and he's clearly someone that they're not worried is going to shake the room around. He'll fit in perfect and is clearly a great human. No one would ever suggest the opposite. It's an interesting look at what will be for sure one of their black aces. Stockton's had a rough year. They're probably not going to make the playoffs unless they get on a heater here. Dylan Dubé is about a point per game down there. Alan Quine's over a point per game, 40 and 33, and was at times very strong for the Flames over his 9-game recall. I think Quine would be up right now, Eric, except that 10th game would require waivers. They want to save him for down the stretch because I do believe he is the first forward they would use in a playoff game.
100% agree. Rich Sutter gets down there and sees those guys a lot and talks to his brother who kind of oversees all of it for the Flames organization. And he says Quine is by far the best player down there of late. He's just been tearing it up and playing really, really well. But rave reviews on Dylan Dubé. And even Valimaki, they're pretty happy with the way he's played right now. Lazar's numbers have been good, and his attitude, is well documented. I think the Flames have done a good job, I think, over the last several years, rewarding guys who are doing well on the farm. Certainly this year, we've seen tons of it. And go ahead and take your guess at who they're going to call up next. You never know. But I think you did know big picture that, yeah, I agree. Quine will be a guy we'll see down the stretch, and I think we knew we'd see Lazar at some point. But again, I'm sure they don't want to run into that 10-game thing either, where they have to send him through waivers to send him back down after 10 games. But anyway, we're running out of games to worry about that. But I'm intrigued. I'm not expecting much from Lazar, but I'm very intrigued. I would love to see this guy turn his career around.
Yeah, a lot of people are rooting for him, to be sure, and good reason for it. Good human as we continue to document. Okay, let's move to some other items. Just a thought on the deadline. We have one more visit. That will be next Friday. That will be 3 days ahead of the trade deadline, Feb 25. And I believe you'll be clearly watching closely what happens for the Calgary Flames on that day. What are your expectations for them? There's been a lot of talk about Mark Stone. Do you think the Flames would pay a high price for a rental? Or is that still to be determined?
I think it's evolving or devolving. I think that what they've done over the last, six games, losing five of them, I think that changes the GM's mindset. I think he's just kind of trying to process all this, because I think when they were world beaters and they won, 17 of 18 points going into the break, I think you're wondering, do I dare touch any of this, or, how can I improve this? Well, I don't really want to mess with it too much. I think without question they'll be looking for a depth defenseman. You want to have 8 or 9 deep in case you do make some sort of run. But I don't think that it's completely ridiculous to suggest that they, look at the past of this general manager. He's got a massive set on him. He's not scared to take chances, to roll the dice. I don't think this is the year. Personally, big picture, I don't think this is the year to throw your chips in the middle and go for it. But if you thought you could bring Mark Stone here and you thought you might be able to fit him in your cap next year, and convince him to stay here, maybe because his brother's here, maybe because you feel like you have some other advantage over all the other teams in the league, then maybe. But as a pure rental, as long as it doesn't involve Dylan Dubé or Valimaki, I'd be all for it. Eric Duhatchik had an interesting, scenario that he painted in The Athletic today about potential in terms of a deal that they might be able to broker. And I'd be all for it if that was the deal that they could broker. I think it was a first rounder. I think it was Shillington. And I think it was Mangiapane. At that price tag, I'm all in. I'm for. But if you're going to start dipping into guys that are better prospects than those, then I'm out. I don't think they should take the chance. Another name is Matt Zuccarello. And hey, lots of teams are linked to these guys. But I'm not saying he wouldn't be. I think he could be a good fit. Derek Brassard. He was telling us yesterday that the minute he was traded from Pittsburgh to Florida, they told him, just so you know, don't unpack all your stuff. We may be sending you somewhere else. He's a versatile guy with some playoff success. He might fit in Calgary. So I think they're looking. I'm pretty sure they're going to go out and get somebody to fill in that role that Frolik's been kind of warming up or not warming up. That second line, wing spot. But again, you know, there are a lot. There's lots of competition out there, and that's also part of why I think the Flames are really interesting, because they don't want the other teams that they're going to be fighting for to get one of those guys.
Yeah, there's lots of guys. I don't know that if you're going to operate to keep people away from other teams, don't know that's the best way to operate. You're going to be given lots of bad contracts on July 1 and things like that. it's probably a slight bonus, no?
It's a slight bonus. Yeah, no, I don't think it's one of the main reasons. You do it because you feel like you've got a hole in your roster, and if you plug that hole, you could change, you know, the face of your team to some degree. Do you think they're going to be very active? I don't know. I haven't heard much from Calgary in terms of what people are thinking. I know people are hoping for a Mark Stone, but that's, you know, Calgary and 29 other cities that are hoping for Mark Stone.
Well, that's the thing. In my opinion, Ottawa, if they do a good job here, should be able to extract a huge, huge return. Now, they didn't get one for Hoffman, nor did they probably arguably didn't for Carlson, given that he's been the best defenseman in the league for probably 10 years. So maybe they screw this one up somehow. But when you have the number of contenders that we hear are interested, and when you look at some of the war chests that teams like Vegas have in terms of prospects and picks and young roster players, I just have a tough time thinking the package that they would have to put together to beat out the others is one that this GM's comfortable with. Plus, we've heard on the record, he and Craig Conroy saying, really tough to give up a first if you're getting someone back with no term. And I love the idea of him signing here, but I'm also realistic that there's going to be probably 25-plus teams saying, Mark, come play for us, and every market has their own advantages. Yes, you're in Western Canada. Yes, his brother is currently on the roster, but come on now. There's a lot of places where there's a thing that winter doesn't exist there, and they have, you know, whatever it is, better tax setup. Maybe it's his best friend in junior. I mean, every market's going to come up with their reasons why. If people are suggesting it's a coin flip that he'd stay here or not, they're completely miscasting what I think the field would actually be.
Yeah, I think the chances of him being here next year as a UFA or as a holdover, you know, as a rental to and staying, I think the chances are minute. If you're this close to unrestricted free agency, I've never understood why a guy wouldn't just, you know, wait it out for another couple of months and then see what 29 other teams have to offer.
Sure.
So,
yeah,
you know, I think it's wishful thinking. But all I'm saying is, given this GM's history, and we all know how he operates, it wouldn't be the biggest shocker in the history of hockey if he was the guy who came up and won that sweepstakes as a rental. So, but again, if these guys continue to lose over the next week and a half leading into the deadline, then I think it reinforces my belief that this team isn't ready to start pushing all their chips in anyway. And then, you know, save your bullets. And you know, use them for next year and gear up for next year being the one year for sure that you're all in. I mean, that's the interesting debate to me. It's not, hey, do you think we can get Mark Stone? It's, hey, do you think we should go out and try to get Mark Stone? That's the bigger question. And I say no. I personally say no.
I'll say this. I don't think teams know in mid-Feb if it's their year or not. I think we like to think because we look at the standings. But go look at the President's Trophy winner. That's the team that in mid-Feb usually would feel the best about this is our year. It's a kiss of death. The Canucks got to the final. Chicago did it and went wire-to-wire only in a lockout shortened year, not an 82-game sample. And Detroit did it 11 years ago. There's no one else that's even made it to the final. Go ask the Washington Capitals about feeling good in mid-February. I don't think you know when your year is, and you probably try to just say, here's a 4 or 5 year window where we're going to be competitive, and who knows when we're healthy, when we're playing well in the spring, and when we don't run into a red hot goalie that can steal a series on the other side. I think this notion of knowing when it's your year is just, you can't prove it to be real, because all the teams you'd like in mid February can't get to the final with any regularity.
Oh, no. Like, I don't think anybody ever says this is our year. I mean, if ever I saw a season where I thought a team could say, you know what, this is our year, might have been Vegas last year. Everything just seemed to, the stars all seemed to align. And damn it, it almost was their year against the most incredible odds in sports history. But, you know, you got a situation now where clearly the Calgary Flames have a 3-year, maybe a 4-year window to do some serious damage in the playoffs, if not, you know, really challenge for the cup. And if you throw a number of chips, even a few chips into the middle this year, it hurts you, your ability to do it next year or the year after that. So I think this GM is looking at it pragmatically and saying, long term, yeah, we like the way we're trending. Hey, maybe we can win a round or two this year, maybe three. But at what cost? I'm not willing to throw too many assets at it right now. This just makes common sense to me.
Enjoy Pittsburgh. Enjoy the Crosby and Company show, and we will see you in town early next week.
Thanks, my man. Take care.
Eric Francis Friday is brought to you by the Beltliner.